Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Friday, November 22nd, 11:04 Central Standard Time, and we are wrapping up our week with a great topic. We're talking about preparing for the holidays and something that we don't always necessarily think of when the holidays are rolling around. We're going to talk about checking in on our aging loved ones, our older loved ones, and what we need to look for when we're checking in on them, when we're visiting with them in the coming days. If you'd like to join us for this conversation, we're talking with our friends from Lutheran Senior Services. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so today, 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. We're going to jump into that conversation here in just a little bit. Before that, I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Click on the sponsor section. Go to the sponsor section. Click on the CUW logo. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the programs they have to offer, where they're located, and not just in Wisconsin. So go check it out, kfuo.org. Well, as I mentioned, our topic today for the first segment is about checking in on our loved ones. And the second segment, actually, we are very privileged to have gotten an interview via Skype yesterday with our team serving in the Philippines. So that'll be our second segment coming up at the bottom of the hour. And you'll hear from Deaconess Pam Nielsen serving on the disaster response team from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the Philippines. So stick around for that during the second half of the show. First half of the show, we're checking in on our older adults, our family members who are older over the holidays. And today, joining us for this conversation, Carol Melka. She is the Director of Outreach Services from Lutheran Senior Services. Thanks for joining us in the studio today, Carol.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here.
It is good to have you here. Always fun to have guests in studio. Conversation is a lot more fun. Not that the phone is anything bad, but always good to for you to make the trip over here and visit us here at KFUO. So you've been with Lutheran Senior Services for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about your background with Lutheran Senior Services.
I've been with Lutheran Senior Services for over 13 years, and my background is case management with older adults in regards to helping them plan for long-term care options and community resource planning. My role right now is Director of Outreach Services, so I oversee three in-home service programs that are funded by the United Way of Greater St. Louis. The in-home service programs help older adults remain independent in their homes.
And that's important, I'm sure, for many people. When they start thinking about later stages in life, that's probably the one thing that most folks don't want to give up is their independence and living on their own.
Definitely. According to AARP, 90% of older adults wish to remain in their home. So we are happy at Lutheran Senior Services to be able to give them options if they want to do that. So.
Sure. And that makes sense to me. You know, when I was younger, I always enjoyed going out being adventurous and exploring new places, especially some of the places that I've gotten to live around this country. I always took advantage of the opportunity when I was single to go out and explore and visit new places. And I'm finding now, the older I get, the more I prefer just to be at home, the more I like being at home. Not that I don't enjoy going out and being adventurous, taking the family out for vacation and that sort of thing, but I always enjoy being at home. So it makes sense to me now as I'm, maturing. Maybe we'll call it that.
Sure. And many of our older adults, they have so many memories at their home. Mm-hmm. They are comfortable with their home. They have neighbors they're friendly with. They're active in their church. So they want to stay at home if they can. So.
Sure. And that makes sense to me. Now, you are the Director of Outreach Services. What all does Outreach Services entail?
Sure. The programs serve adults who are 60 years and older and adults 50 years and older with a disability who live in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and Jefferson County. The three programs that are part of Outreach Services are Outreach Social Services. Outreach Social Services has a free Aging Answers line where we have elder care specialists who can provide you with free community resource information over the phone. They can also provide case management services. What that involves is going out and doing an in-home in-home assessment to see what the challenges are in regards to maybe taking care of a loved one, or if a older adult's remaining at home, what the challenges are in helping them provide resource information to help them stay there. We also have the Good Neighbor Program, which is a free referral service in which we match a person with an independent caregiver who helps with cleaning, cooking, laundry, assistance with personal care, and running errands. The caregivers are independently employed, and so we match them with an older adult who needs those non-medical tasks. Caregivers are, since they're independent, you pay them directly for services, and the rates are $10 to $15 an hour with a four-hour minimum charge per visit.
And that sounds like a really nice service. Now, what about families with small children? Can we get into those services?
I wish you could, but you have to at least be 50 years and older with a disability, or 60 years and older. But yeah, we do get some requests from folks who maybe we have grandparents raising grandkids, and
sure. So
those kids need help too. But unfortunately, with the program, we're not able to do that. And then our third program is Volunteer Money Management. This is an interfaith partnership with Jewish Family and Children Services and Lutheran Senior Services. And volunteers are linked with older adults who need money management assistance in order to stay in their homes. We have many older adults as they age who may have difficulty writing checks due to arthritis, or they have vision difficulties or hearing difficulties. And so all of that make it difficult to complete those daily money management tasks, such as budgeting, balancing your checkbook, writing out checks, calling the bank, organizing mail, going through mail. And so we have volunteers who will travel to their home once a month and help them with those tasks.
Or maybe someone who's lost a spouse, and the spouse,
yes,
who died was the one who managed the checkbook. And so I could see how that would be a helpful service.
That's a perfect example, Andy. We do get a lot of folks who are call us, spouse has died, and they weren't involved with the financial process at all. And so they need a volunteer to come in, help them organize, help them understand their finances. So yeah, definitely have those folks as well.
Great resources. And, you know, as I was thinking about today's program, quite often when we think of Lutheran Senior Services, we think of residential communities and moving and living in a community with other seniors. But the outreach services that you provide really encourage and support seniors to live at home, to live independently, which is great. Now, when we're thinking about seniors living independently, we're thinking about family members who are aging, or older family members living by themselves, especially maybe if they're living alone. Maybe, you know, it's a widow or a widower, someone living alone. What are the things that we need to think about when we're visiting them over the holidays, or any time of year, really? I mean, holidays certainly are when visits seem to happen more frequently. What are the things that we need to look for?
Sure. One thing I would look for is a concern for me is falling, or if they're at risk for falling. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 30% of older adults 65 and older will fall each year. And the home is the number one place where they're going to fall. And 50% of those older adults may not tell their doctor about it. So when you're at the home, you're going to have to be on the lookout for some signs, such as perhaps they're having difficulty getting up and down from chairs, so they're unsteady. They're using furniture to steady themselves as they walk from room to room. Mm-hmm. You notice new bruises that you've never seen before. That would be one concern of mine. Another one would be memory loss. And this is to the extent that it's interfering with their ability to do their day-to-day activities. So while you're talking with them and having conversation, they may repeat the same story within the same visit. They are repeating questions to you about something you just answered 15 minutes ago. They're having difficulties finding the right words to say to you. So, for example, they may call a pencil a writing thing, or a piano a music thing. They can't think of what that word is. So those are some things you can be on the lookout for in regards to memory loss. The household's in disarray. Perhaps mom or dad has always been really good about keeping up with household chores, and now you notice that it doesn't look like there's been any vacuuming done. There's stacks of dirty dishes. Laundry hasn't been done. So they're just not able to keep up with those household tasks. So that would be another red flag as well. And then unexplained weight loss. You may notice that mom or dad's lost some weight. Their clothes aren't fitting them the way they used to. or when you're at the holiday dinner, you notice mom or dad isn't eating the way she used to, or perhaps they're...
Now, see, in our family, that would be a huge sign.
Yes. Usually, yes. Everyone's around the table and everyone can see who's eating and who's doing what. So definitely, if you notice that, or maybe they're having difficulty chewing their food, they could have some dental issues or swallowing. Definitely be observant of that at the mm-hmm. family gathering. You know, we're coming up on the holidays and to look for that. Another thing would be inadequate medication management. Perhaps you notice that there's empty medication bottles throughout the house. There isn't really a system in place to track medications. So it just doesn't seem very orderly. That would be another sign.
All of these are, you know, things that seem like common sense, but, you know, I might not necessarily think of them. Do you have something to help us think through these things to help me or others, you know, to help our listeners think through what is the stuff that I need to think about or need to consider? What do I need to check on when it comes to visiting with aging loved ones?
Definitely. We have a red flag safety checklist. This is a great tool to use to help you determine objectively whether the older adult in your life needs more assistance in order to remain independent in their home. The checklist actually goes through some of the common things to be on the lookout for, such as cognition, some of it we've already talked about, nutrition, safety in the home environment, support system, their physical abilities, and any recent transitions. So you can go through the checklist, and if you choose more than one item in each category, that would be a sign to you that you need to follow up with a professional to get more assistance. The professional could be a doctor, or you could call our Aging Answers line, and we would be happy to talk to you. One of our elder care specialists can point you in the right direction on what resources are available to help them in that situation.
Now, as I was going through the list, I thought some of these are things that I might need to check on when it comes to myself. Some of these things, you know, forget meals, are making calls at odd times of day, but perhaps it's just because of the newborn in the house, not really knowing what time of day it is. But yeah, some of these things seem like just everyday things. But as you pointed out, when there are more than one or two, you know, when there are multiples in a category, when it comes to the cognitive or the behavioral type things, when there are multiples, that's when we need to be concerned.
Yeah. The big thing is if something's going on that's interfering with their ability to do their day-to-day activities, you know, memory loss to the extent that maybe they're driving to the grocery store and not remembering why they drove there, or they don't remember how to get home. There's a lot of things that start adding up. Mm-hmm. And the more you look at this and there's a lot of things, then there's probably you need to follow up on that and have a conversation with them.
Certainly. Today, we're talking with Carol Melka, Director of Outreach Services from Lutheran Senior Services. And we're talking about checking in on our loved ones, our older loved ones over the holiday season. If you have a question for Carol today, you can call us here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. Other things on the checklist, we were talking about cognitive or behavioral type things. We mentioned eating earlier, nutrition. You sit down at a meal and they're not, you know, necessarily eating along with everybody else, or not eating as much. Other signs that nutrition might be an issue?
I always look in, when I'm visiting with an older adult, I look in the refrigerator to see if they actually have food in the house. Maybe there's an issue they don't have transportation to get to the grocery store. Or if they get meals on wheels, are they eating the meals on wheels that are being delivered to them? Those would be signs, you know, that nutrition-wise, they may not be eating what they need to. And there's a lot of different causes to that. And mm-hmm. if they're not eating, they definitely need to follow up with a doctor to see what's going on in regards to that. Also, physical appearance. Someone who's always kept up on, you know, making sure they're neat and tidy. And now all of a sudden you notice that their clothing isn't the way, you know, isn't pressed like it used to. They seem to be in disarray in regards to what they're wearing. So that would be a sign as well. Again, it's a change from what it used to be.
So if somebody was really a mess before and all of a sudden they're really neat and tidy, is that a sign?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But if it's a change where, you're again, there's multiple changes going on. Then it's something to follow up on. But definitely just, financial concerns. Again, if you see piles or stacks of bills on the table and maybe they're having difficulty now understanding that, or maybe they're having vision difficulties and they don't want to tell you that, it's just noticing that and then having a conversation with them, not at the holiday party, but doing this outside of that, picking a quiet day to go talk to mom and dad about your concerns.
How do you start those conversations?
Yes, those conversations can be difficult for family members. I definitely would use I statements when you're talking to them. I noticed at the holiday party that you're having difficulty getting up and down from chairs. I noticed piles of laundry, or I noticed that you seem to be losing weight. And I'm concerned. And I just want to talk to you about it. And you may say, I just can't be here as often as I want to. And I want to make sure you're safe and that you have the resources and services that you need to stay independent. Mm-hmm. And I want to have this, I want to talk to you now. I don't want to wait until something happens where we may not be able to have this conversation and hear what you have to say. So being, forthright and just letting them know I care about you and I want to help you stay independent. As we get older, our needs change. And again, it's just normalizing that with them. You may need to mention other family members who had to make some changes due to their health conditions and let them know this is normal and that I can help you and we'll find out what's the best options for you.
It's okay.
It is okay. That's right.
Email question from Mary in Southern Illinois. Mary says, what do you do to be sure that helpers are honest and will not steal from the client, as has happened in my family?
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. Caregivers should be screened they should complete a criminal background check, elder abuse check, and family care safety registry. All agencies should be doing that if you get them through a agency here in Missouri. In Illinois, I'm uncertain about the guidelines, but I'm assuming that all of them would have to be screened before they're sent out. But I definitely would ask questions. When you are going to be accessing an in-home service program, find out what screenings they do. Do they check their backgrounds? Do reference checks? What's their history in regards to helping caregivers? Usually they have to have some sort of experience coming in. But that's very scary. Here at Lutheran Senior Services, we do criminal background checks on all of our caregivers before they're sent out in our Good Neighbor program and in our private duty program. But you need to ask questions. There's the requirements vary from state to state in regards to what they have to legally complete with their caregivers. So
asking for references
is fine. So you can ask those questions and get that information. There's a lot of good agencies out there who and the people who work there who truly want to help people stay in their home.
Mm-hmm. Great. Great question. Thanks, Mary. And we'll go to the phones now. Cheryl in Indianapolis. Cheryl, what's your question today?
My question concerns, I'm acting as the caregiver for my 96-year-old mom. And whenever she wants to leave the house, such as a church service at 5 p.m., she will cut back on her water. She is afraid she'll have an accident. Her doctor told her that not to do this because it leads to her meds not working right, like her blood pressure medicine and what she takes for mental confusion, and also for her she needs a high enough water to avoid constipation caused by her medications. She insists that, she's going to cut back on water. Otherwise, she's not going to go anywhere. And I'm kind of frustrated by this. I try to encourage her to at least eat something. She avoids having lunch on days when she goes to church, just because she doesn't want to have an accident, public embarrassment, even though there's a bathroom there that she could go to. Yeah, and it's going to be a problem for Thanksgiving Day, too.
Well, those are, I definitely have heard that from other family members in regards to older adults cutting back on their water intake or food intake before going to gatherings, whether it's church gatherings or family gatherings. And I usually suggest, and it sounds like you're already doing that, is gently, you know, encouraging them to, drink water, eat, for the reasons that you already gave, that the doctor really you need to do this for your health. You may also want to see if there's another friend or family member who can also encourage her. So maybe it isn't you saying that, you know what, I know it can be difficult, but I think it's important. We need to drink our water and definitely eat so that we can truly fully participate too. If we're hungry or if we're thirsty, we may not really be able to participate to the full extent that we would want to at those gatherings. But it is a difficult situation. I have heard that from other family members. But you definitely, for the reasons you already stated, you want to encourage her to eat and drink and the importance of that. Maybe hearing that from somebody else could encourage her to do that as well.
Thanks for your call, Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you for the suggestion.
Absolutely. Thanks. So I didn't think about that in terms of preparing for, trying to plan ahead for the evening. Someone might think, oh, I don't want to ruin the evening, or I'm afraid of being embarrassed, and so avoiding food. And I didn't even think about how that could affect medications and things like that as well.
Yes, I have those concerns, and definitely family members have those concerns, and it sounds definitely like the caller has talked to her about that. So maybe it's somebody else approaching her and just gently reminding her, let's drink some water now, or also let's both drink some water now, or let's both eat now. And maybe doing that together, that'll encourage her to do that. But I know that's a fear for a lot of older adults, and it's a difficult situation. So,
other common questions that you might get from time to time that, they seem to be common in your office, your department gets them all the time, but we may not necessarily think, oh, that's something that somebody deals with, something that a lot of people deal with on a regular basis. What are the top questions?
Sure. Sometimes we have siblings who are taking care of an older adult, and they may disagree on the best options available for mom or dad. One may be coming in from out of town from the holidays, and they see one thing with mom needing assistance, and then you have another sibling who's here in the area and sees her on a regular basis, and they feel that mom's doing good. If there is any type of disagreement, it may be a good point to have an objective assessment done at that point by an elder care specialist. Lutheran Senior Services does offer that. That objective assessment is great because a professional can look at it from a different viewpoint and objectively look at what's going on and come up with resources and solutions to help whatever challenges may be coming up. And perhaps mom or dad is doing good. And so we can say, you know what, she's doing good in these areas, but this area, maybe she needs a little bit more support. And that's helpful for all members of the family to get that kind of evaluation. So
we've got about 2 minutes left, and I know you have some great resources to point our listeners to today. Obviously, the Aging Answers line is a great resource.
Yes.
314-446-2475, is that right?
Yes. That is open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 p.m., and we have elder care specialists who can talk to you about your situation. We can mail you a red flag safety checklist if you want that, and we can just help guide you in the right direction in regards to whatever concerns you may have. I also want to mention to those who are out of town who need resources, there is an elder care locator, which is a federally funded program where you can receive assistance in your area, because I know we've had some calls from people outside of the St. Louis area. So you can just do an internet search for that and receive assistance through an area agency on aging. But Outreach Social Services Aging Answers line definitely can help you with any resource situations that you may need. We also have a Living Safe Technologies program, which is great for someone who's living independently and by themselves, which we've talked a little bit about. And if they are at risk for falling, we have a personal emergency response system where they can get help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if they do have an incident where they fall and they need immediate assistance. And they also have technology. I am so excited about all the new technology out there to help people remain in their homes. You can actually now get a fall sensor. So if you, let's say you fall and you hit your head and you're not able to push the button to get help, the fall sensor will alert the call center that you did in fact fall and alert family members and or emergency personnel. So there's technology has come a long way. And I'm always encouraging people to look at that. It may be a great option if they want to stay in their homes to access that technology.
Great. All great suggestions, great resources. Carol, thanks so much for spending some time here in the studio with us today and talking about how to check in on our loved ones over the holidays. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been great chatting with you. In the next segment, we're going to hear from our disaster relief response team in the Philippines. So stick around for that segment. It is a pre-recorded segment, so listener lines will be closed for the second half of the show today.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
There's an ongoing aggressive effort by pro-abortion advocates to silence the pro-life side, even at the detriment to women and babies. A pro-life woman help center in Elgin, Illinois, was sending their mobile ultrasound unit to a local church, bar, and high school. It offered free ultrasound and other resources to pregnant women. In order to stop their pro-life efforts, pro-abortion city officials reclassified their mobile unit as temporary land use and limited its use at each location to only 4 times a year. Keep in mind, the pro-abortion site is constantly accusing pro-lifers of waging a war on women by denying them access to health care. In other words, abortion on demand. A federal court declared the zoning unconstitutional, and once again, women will have the services they desperately need.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service has been there for me since I began the American leg of my journey as a refugee. Their staff helped me and my family to a local church in the community where I resettled, a church whose hospitality could not have been more important in my transition to a welcoming American society. Learn more about Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and journeys like mine, lirs.org.
A time to sleep, a time to wake up.
A time for his time every morning on Worldwide KFUO from 7:15 to 9:30.
Hi, this is Rod Swanitzer.
And Andy Bates, hosts of His Time, encouraging you to listen.
It's a time for the news and the weather.
A time for special guest interviews.
A time for scripture readings and listener participation of the New Testament reading for the day.
A time for morning prayer service.
Make His Time your time, mornings at 7:15.
Here on the Messenger of Good News.
Worldwide KFUO.
Becoming a Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor is easy in the 21st century. First, pick a reason to celebrate, a birthday, an anniversary, or other event, and call me, Mary Schmidt, or Joni Harwell at 1-800-844-0524. For helping support the worldwide outreach of KFUO, you'll receive announcements on KFUO for a special date honoring your day sponsorship. Call us at 1-800-844-0524.
As Americans mark the 50th anniversary of President John F. Kennedy's assassination, Christians worldwide are remembering a beloved and renowned defender of their faith who died the same day. In London, Westminster Abbey is holding a service today to dedicate a memorial to C.S. Lewis, the prolific author whose writings ranged from scholarly reflections on Christianity to the Chronicles of Narnia.
"I believe in Christianity," he wrote, "as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else."
Vicar Tim Stead spoke last Sunday in a commemorative service at Holy Trinity Church in Oxford, where Lewis worshipped for 30 years.
"As we look backwards to remember Lewis, let us, like him, also look forward to anticipate heaven."
Lewis died November 22, 1963, a week shy of his 65th birthday. I'm Steve Coleman.
with acts of mercy to provide aid, but it also moves us to respond with the clear, pure gospel of Jesus Christ.
Thanks for joining us for this special segment of Faith and Family today. We had the opportunity to visit with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Associate Executive Director of Communication Services with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and also serving on the LCMS Disaster Response Team in the Philippines in response to the recent typhoon. This part of the program is pre-recorded, so we will not be taking calls from the listener line during this time. But we do hope that you'll find the information helpful, and so you can find out what's going on with our brothers and sisters in the Philippines and their recovery efforts after the recent typhoon. If you'd like to support the efforts, you can do so by going to lcms.org/disaster. And there you can find information about the response that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is providing and the efforts that it'll take from us and how you can support financially there at lcms.org. You can also see photos and video footage from our team as they have been visiting over the last few days helping the Lutheran Church in the Philippines respond. Pam, you're serving on the disaster response team, and how long ago did you arrive in the Philippines?
We arrived like 10, well, no, when did we arrive? We left on a Friday and arrived on a Saturday night, and we spent the night in Manila. And then the next morning, on Sunday morning, we flew because, of course, they're all islands. It's not like just one landmass. Something like 70 islands form the Philippines. So we flew from Manila to the island of Cebu. Trying to think if we, it's all kind of a blur. Did we spend the night there? No, I don't think we did. We then boarded the plane.
You said you were flying because of all the islands. You flew to the islands. As you were flying over the islands, could you see any of the destruction as you were flying in?
Actually, no, because we were flying from the north to the south, so we didn't get to where the destruction would have been obvious. And what we did was fly to the island of Cebu, and from there we took a boat to the island of Leyte, which is where all the news is coming from. On the island of Leyte is Tacloban, which is sort of ground zero.
And when you headed there, you really had no idea what you would see, but you had had somewhat of an idea of what you were going there for. What was the initial mission or the purpose of this trip?
Well, the initial purpose was to join our brothers and sisters in the Lutheran Church of the Philippines. It was at their request, made by their president to our president, to the LCMS president, that we would come because we have a decade of experience in LCMS disaster response. And that decade has afforded, sadly, our director, Reverend Glenn Merritt, over 230 opportunities to respond to disasters worldwide, including all of the big ones in the last decade, the Japan, Haiti, Katrina, Chile, earthquake and tsunami. So they knew about our disaster response, also because we've been doing international disaster preparedness training for Lutheran church bodies. And the Philippines had a trained team. They had been to this. And as soon as this happened, they called and their president and called Reverend Merritt and said, "Can you come? We need you." So the point was to come, to be with them, to help them assess the damage in the areas where they have churches. And they have three churches on this island of Leyte that were severely damaged or completely destroyed, along with the members of those churches, and then, of course, the communities that the churches live and exist in. And together with the Philippine leaders and our team, we began by visiting those hard-hit churches, and then on an incredibly hot and sunny humid day walking from the church to members' homes. Members' homes on the shore, members' homes up in the hills. It's a mountainous country, and we, with them, visited those who had suffered damage. And I've got to say that the entire island has been hit by this this typhoon. No one was spared. Nothing was spared. And that's quite different than a tornado or something that we experience, awful destruction in the midst of the zone, but you can, you know, drive or get a ride 20 miles out, 50 miles out, and get to a Walmart or a Target, get some groceries, find a hotel you can stay in. But here you have an entire island completely dark because of no power, completely silent because of no communications. All of that was damaged in the storm, destroyed. House upon house leveled, or nearly leveled. People's livelihoods, it's an agricultural area, stripped off the land. Complete devastation for an entire island.
Wow. As you visited the people, who were some of the people that you visited with there, some of the members?
Well, two that really stick out in my mind. We walked the path down to the coastline, and we walked past many, many homes in that community. But we got to a very modest home of a fishing family. They lived right on the shore. And their livelihood was net casting a fish, and they had a small boat in a shallow harbor there that they would catch fish and sell it. They lost the roof and other parts of their house. They've been living with no shelter. I mean, the case is that nobody has really anywhere to go, so you stay in what's left of your home, or you try to piece it back together with rubble that's around you. And that's exactly what they had done. And they built a little sort of a hut, like you might see at a tropical resort where you would maybe go up and get a drink, and it's a little thatched roof and just four posts. And that now has become where they eat and where they sleep. And they're cooking their food, as they always do in this region, over a wood burning fire. But not only is their home damaged, but they have no food. And that is the case, home after home, family after family. After the typhoon struck, they had nothing, except that on that day, on that Sunday, the people who came to church received a bag of rice and a few other small food items that had been prepared by members of the Lutheran Church of the Philippines and given out. But that was it. And yet, these people confessed their faith, their hope in God, and they could smile and chat with us. They were thrilled for our team to come. They were grateful for the visitation. And then we went from there back to the road and across the road and went up a very steep incline, passing again many other huts and houses, to a group of houses, again, a member family, extended family, and they are coconut growers, and they have a bit of property, and on that property, 50 coconut trees, and of those 50, 47 were snapped off. And we asked the pastor, well, how quickly can you regrow a coconut tree? This is his living. And he said, well, it would take 15 years for it to be restored to what it was before he could really begin to make money off of coconuts. So you begin to see the kind of disarray, the extent of the damage. You can maybe rebuild a house quickly, but some of these livelihoods aren't so quickly restored. And then that becomes part of the church's response. How do we help people get back on their feet in a way that they're earning a living? So that was a good bit of the week. Visiting, listening, hearing people's stories, and finding out how gravely they've suffered. And then meeting back at the church, Christ Lutheran Church, with the church leaders. And the church has lost its roof. And so there's water standing in the church floor inside and debris and things. But that was a place where we could meet and just begin to talk about the kind of damage and what the Lutheran church leaders there in the Philippines thought that they would like to try to do, first for their members and then even for their community. So those meetings were very, very important as they brainstormed and as we provided out of our experience of a decade of disaster response, some guidance, some suggestions, and out of that has come an early, probably not yet the final plan, but plans for immediate, intermediate, and long-term disaster recovery for the people around these congregations.
So it's certainly going to take some time for recovery, and working on that plan may even take more time. What are the next steps that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will be taking? Are there any steps that have been determined yet to help with that recovery effort?
Set up a $50,000 matching grant for our other partner churches worldwide to help support the Philippine church. And while there, after assessing things, because of the immediate needs for food and fuel, shelter, we gave an additional amount out of our disaster fund reserves. And that is all just to preserve daily life right now in what is truly dire circumstances. Everything that these people need has to be brought onto the island. All their sources are destroyed. So they're rationing water, they're rationing rice and other food items, they're rationing fuel. And so a real first step is getting food to them and to the families of the churches and hopefully enough to go beyond into the communities.
And what's that going to take on the part of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Will we need people to donate money or food, or what needs to happen next from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members, from the laity?
Continued prayer is the first thing. They need our prayers. They covet our prayers, and they are strengthened knowing that we pray for them. But in a tangible way, in a human way, the greatest thing that we could do right now is to send money, to send it to the lcms.org, to the Lutheran Church in the Philippines, empowers them to go out and buy the things that they know that their people need, rice and beans and canned goods, fuel, tarps for roofs that are damaged, building supplies for homes that are leveled. So the dollar gifts, the financial gifts are really, really the best thing and the most useful right now because, for instance, the man whose coconut trees all snapped off, before we left, we said to the church leaders, we're going to buy you a chainsaw. And we did. And now they're going to be turning these fallen trees into lumber that will be used in the rebuilding and repairing of houses that are down so that they don't have to go out and buy more lumber. They've got plenty of lumber. They just needed a saw to be able to get it in the form that they need for rebuilding houses. And it's that kind of thing. When you give a financial gift, it frees not only our disaster response, but it frees the Lutheran Church of the Philippines to consider the best use of that money at the time that they receive it. Much better than here's a crate of clothes or here's old shoes or what we thought they might need. It allows them the ability to get what they truly need and to get it swiftly. And that's really, really important. I don't think any of us understands this kind of disaster. I know Katrina maybe got close, but when you drive across this island and as you approach the city of Tacloban, our team members who went there, we didn't all go because not enough vehicles and it wasn't safe, but they said 20 miles out were the children lining the street, the main road into the city with hands and baskets out, signs that said, help us, we're hungry, feed us, save us, and children begging. And this is not a country where children beg. This is, as the one pastor said, not common. They're begging because they're hungry. The situation truly is dire. Aid is starting to pour in, but there's so much debris. You got to clear roads, and you got to be able to get around the island. And I want to go back to when we arrived, because for all of us on our team, it was quite a moment as we took this boat, which brought us to the island of Leyte about midnight. And of course, we were tired, we were disoriented, we didn't know the geography. But at a certain point in the boat ride, we started to smell smoke. And at first we were alarmed, my goodness, we're on a boat, are we on fire? And someone said, no, that's wood burning. And we all said, yeah, that is. And the smoke got stronger and stronger. We'd look out the windows, couldn't see a thing, but was that smoke? And before we knew it, boat was slowing down, and we looked out, and we could see a flashlight here and a flashlight there, and we had reached the island of Leyte. No power. So before we could ever get there, we could smell the island, because all over people were burning debris, building fires to cook with, to light their evenings by. And we got off the boat with all the other people, and people who had come, family members, bringing what they thought they should bring, food and clothing and things. Everyone was very somber and very serious stepping off that boat, and the dock was busy. There were trucks and things coming and going, but it was really intentional, and people were just intent on what they were doing. And then we got in a van and we drove, I guess it was about 45 minutes to where the church was. And just our headlights, that narrow kind of path that headlights make in the dark of night, we could see the destruction lining this main road, houses fallen, and people out, and fires, and in places, children walking around at midnight. It was really kind of surreal, and it just struck us all. And the thing that we kind of focused on was the contrast of light and darkness, and how disorienting the darkness is, and how almost deafening it was to be in that situation. And then when we got out to the church and pulled in, we all got out, and they led us to the back of the church to what really is for them a fellowship hall, but it's open air. There's a roof and a bit of a kitchen in the back, a very kind of primitive kitchen with a wood-burning area for cooking the food. And here was a table with a single candle burning on it, and the pastor and his family, and five families who lost their home, who are now sheltering at the church. they had prepared out of what little food they had and had been given. They had prepared a meal to welcome us. And that light of that little candle and of their welcome was such a contrast to the darkness all around. And that theme just kept occurring to us throughout the week as we encountered the brokenness that this typhoon brought on this land. And for our guys who went up to Tacloban, the very, very hard-hit city, they're still pulling bodies out of the rubble there, and body bags being carried out by volunteers. Not much sign of government or military aid, but volunteers, young and old, even teenagers, pulling bodies out. And the team that went there they continue to speak about the smell of death in the air because, you know, 7-8 days into this disaster, these bodies have been sitting there and they have begun to decompose. And people are still digging through mounds of rubble because they don't know where their families are. One of our guys encountered a man who said he had lost 15 family members, and he could only have found 8 of them. By his own digging through the rubble, he had found 8 of them and was looking for 7 more. Another encounter, one of our pastors, Pastor Steve Shave, he's with our Office of International Mission. The men wore their collars. They wanted to be seen as men of God in this debris field. And someone came up to him near a stack of bodies. They were laid out in the street, waiting to be picked up by a dump truck. That's how they're removing bodies, carting them off to mass graves. And Pastor Shave was approached by a man who asked if he could pray for his dead family members before they were taken away. And he said, well, you know, I'm not a priest, I'm a Lutheran pastor. And he said, they were baptized Christians. Will you bless my dead? Will you pray? And Pastor Shave used our Lutheran commendation of the dying for the baptized, right there in the middle of the street, in the middle of all the rubble, the smell of death filling the air, shining the light of Christ into that utter darkness of death. And that image for him and the rest of the team, it's in the video footage that we filed. We're not going to forget that. And that theme of darkness and light in the light of Christ, that no darkness can overcome. That's what we brought together with the Philippine Lutheran Church leaders. That was at the heart of this disaster response. That light of Christ moves us as Christians to respond with acts of mercy, to provide aid, but it also moves us to respond with the clear, pure gospel of Jesus Christ, spoken boldly in the face of what sin and death has wrought in this world, and particularly in this place on the island of Leyte. So those are just some of our images, some of the things that we're never going to forget, that really we know that these people need both the physical, tangible food, water, shelter, but they also desperately need the saving message of Christ Jesus. They're broken, they're despairing, and they want prayer, they want help. So
we've been talking with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Associate Executive Director of Communication Services in the Department of Communications with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and also serving on the disaster response team in the Philippines following the typhoon. Pam, thank you so much for spending some time today sharing the story of how the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is bringing the mercy of Christ and the witness of Christ to the people who are so desperately in need of it, recovering from this typhoon in the Philippines.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for Faith and Family today. Please include our brothers and sisters in Christ in the Philippines in your prayers, as well as the LCMS disaster response team, who is traveling back at the time of this broadcast. So please keep them all in your prayers. Thanks for joining us.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.